Call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
There is so much wisdom in that song. Good morning, everybody. Coming up, Russell Targ is a physicist and author who was a pioneer in the development of the laser and laser applications. That's hardware stuff, serious hardware stuff. He was also co-founder of the previously secret Stanford Research Institute's investigation into psychic abilities back in the 1970s and 80s. His work in this new area called remote viewing was published in Nature, the magazine Nature. The proceedings of the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers, IEEE, and the proceedings of the American Association for the Advancement of Science. Russell did graduate work in physics at Columbia University and is co-author of 6 books dealing with the scientific investigation of psychic abilities. In 1997, he retired from Lockheed Martin Missile and Space Company as a senior staff scientist. He now pursues ESP research in Palo Alto, California, and is also publishing special editions of classic books into psychic research. Now, it's going to be very interesting to ask him about the story we read a little while ago about what's going on at Princeton. Now, in this consciousness experiment, we now know that, once again, the needle just went off the chart just before the earthquake that produced the tragic tsunami. So we're beginning to get a lot of history under our belt with this. It's beginning to get to be very impressive. Russell Targ, welcome back to the program.
Very happy to be with you this evening.
Great to have you. I read a story in the first hour about this continuing experiment at Princeton. Are you sort of up on that?
Oh, yeah, that's the work done largely by Roger Nelson.
Yes, yes. And it turns out now that the most recent gigantic event was indeed recorded about 30 minutes ahead of time. I refer to the earthquake that caused the tsunami. The needles just went off the chart again at Princeton. Now, it's getting to the point where they've got enough history under their belt that this is beginning to look awfully real.
You may be interested to know the biggest effect that they've ever seen was not from an earthquake or a natural disaster, but rather from the acquittal of O.J. Simpson.
Yes.
What people watch, what scientists like Dean Radin and Roger Nelson watch, is the change in the noise of 30 or 40 random number generators all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And what it appears is that when some momentous world-class event takes place, then the noise output of the random number generators diminishes as they become coherent, as though they are becoming entrained or coherent with the worldwide consciousness.
That's right.
That's what one way of looking at it. Now, events like tsunamis, for example, start slowly, and then you build up and you have an earthquake, and then you build up and you have a tsunami, and that whole event extends over a dozen hours in the case of tsunami, because the wave had to travel all the way from Indonesia across the Indian Ocean to Africa.
Sure.
It's a very, very long time event. So it's tough for a scientist to say, in my strip chart that's running, when did the event occur?
Well, according to this article, they began registering the spike about 30 minutes before the actual earthquake itself. You're familiar, of course, with the 9/11 results, and there are so many more.
That also occurred before the phenomenon.
That's right.
The problem with this data is that a spike could occur 2 hours before the event, as it did with 9/11, or 2 hours after the event, or 5 hours after the event, and the experimenter in a case like that has a lot of leeway to say, look at my chart, I have this very unusual anomaly occurring, but they don't say in advance when it's going to occur. That's why a magician has such a great opportunity when he's showing you a magic trick. You, in general, don't know what the actual trick is going to be. It's an open end point.
Oh, here's a quote by Dick Berman of the University of Amsterdam about all of this. He says, very often paranormal phenomena evaporate if you study them for long enough, says Dick Berman of the University of Amsterdam. But, quote, this is not happening with the Global Consciousness Project. The effect is real. The only dispute is about what it means, end quote.
I agree with him. Dick is a physicist, very thoughtful man. I know him well.
That's a very strong statement.
Well, it's clear that something anomalous is happening. In the case of the O.J. Simpson case example, is really my favorite instance of all these random number generators getting coherent. Because in the O.J. case, you had hundreds of millions of people clustered around their radios and television sets waiting for 9 a.m., and I did that when I was at SRI also. We just clustered around our sets, and the event occurred. That is, like the Academy Award, the judge tore open the envelope and announced the result, and they said, not guilty, and that event had an instantaneous occurrence, and there was no doubt as to when that event occurred, and that was the largest of the events with the global random number generators.
Russell, the reason I think that this is so important is because it has a lot of characteristics of remote viewing, not just in the sense that it seems to transcend time. It seems to be an arena of consciousness, it seems to prove an arena of consciousness being something real in the ether, in the air, everywhere, all around us. The very same arena that perhaps remote viewers work in more studiously, more in a more studied way, and a more disciplined way.
I agree with that. I think that in the case of the random number generators, the Global Consciousness Project that has been carried out now for quite a number of years, these are all well-intentioned, careful people.
Yes.
The criticism that's been made by a number of parapsychologists, and Dick Berman would be among them, without certainly, is that they, in general, the researchers are in general not able to say in advance when the signal is going to occur. So if there's global consciousness responding to an event, we know that there's precognition, so that we'd like to agree, well, if hundreds of thousands of people are going to be killed, you might like to have a big event occur when they're killed rather than several hours before they're killed. Or in the case of the 9/11 disaster, if people are going to crash into a building and kill 3,000 people, you'd expect the global consciousness of the planet to hold its breath when that happened rather than 2 hours before it happened, before the people even got on the airplane.
All right. Well, those who do remote viewing claim a more disciplined science, a very much more disciplined science. And so where were the remote viewers on 9/11?
Well, it's hard for a remote viewer to be continually
scanning.
First of all, it happened early in the morning in New York and even earlier in California. So the easy answer to your question is that most of the remote viewers were asleep.
but I meant days, weeks, months prior to that. Nobody seemed to catch a whiff of it, or did
they? Well, no one was scanning. Our program at SRI was turned off, as you know, in 1995.
Oh, yes.
When the government said, you guys have been doing good work for 25 years since 72, but we no longer have any enemies, so we don't need a psychic group of people doing surveillance for us.
You think that statement's still valid today?
No, I think that...
not having any
enemies? We obviously have a lot of enemies, and I think a remote viewing program would be very helpful. The reason the program was killed in 95 is that people like the Defense Intelligence Agency and the CIA took a lot of flack from Congress and from the press, and high-level people hate to be teased.
I know.
It's career-limiting.
All right, Russell, here's a really important question for you. If there had been a team of remote viewers, good ones, scanning, is it possible for such a thing? In other words, can you have a team devoted to doing nothing other than scanning for major, imminent, gigantic, perhaps even preventable things, the events that are going to happen?
Absolutely.
The answer is yes.
Paul Smith talks about this in his new book, where Paul Smith is one of the leaders of the Fort Meade remote viewing program during the Cold War. He describes that during his training, his monitor, his remote viewing monitor, said, now I have a different task for you. Tell me what's the next important thing that we're going to be dealing with here in Army intelligence.
Uh-huh.
And he didn't know the answer. He just said, tell me what's the next thing.
Yes.
And Paul said, I see a ship and it's been struck by an airborne missile, some kind of bomber. Has dropped a missile, it's hit the ship, I see people running around, there's oil spilled all over, there's a big fire. And he then said to his monitor, who I believe was Ed Danes, how did I do? And he said, well, how should I know? This is in the future, this is something that's going to happen. And 2 days later, the destroyer Cole, that's not right, Stark, the Stark destroyer was struck by a Exocet missile from a Iraqi airplane. So this is something that Paul Smith, who's one of the great remote viewing teachers, was able to describe 2 days before it occurred in response to somebody asking a question just like the one you suggested, what's the next big thing we're going to be dealing with? He scanned the whole universe. He was in Fort Meade. He wasn't in Iraq. He was able to scan the universe and say the next thing we're going to deal with is a destroyer being hit by a missile.
When the Defense Intelligence Agency, CIA and others, were supporting all of this in the 70s and 80s, I believe at Stanford, right?
Yeah, Stanford Research Institute.
Yes, that's right, SRI. What kind of tasking were they given, and what really were the results?
We were generally given real-time tasking. We were one of our famous cases I worked on with psychic policeman Pat Price. We were looking at a Soviet research and development laboratory in Soviet Siberia, and we were asked to describe what are they doing. And Price was able to describe a giant crane rolling back and forth over a building, which appeared in his mind's eye, in his mental space. And he then went on to say, inside the building, they're fabricating a large steel sphere about 60 feet in diameter that they're welding together from orange peel shapes. That's what they're building.
Huh.
The CIA concluded from that that they were making some kind of containment vessel, probably a particle beam weapon.
Oh, I see.
And 2 years later, that exact steel sphere, 60 feet in diameter, was rolled out of the building Price described, and it was indeed part of a particle beam weapon to shoot down the satellites that were taking the pictures that we used for confirmation.
My God, that's a hit, all right.
And we wound up standing in the well of the House of Representatives defending our program because the House Intelligence Committee, House Committee on Intelligence Oversight, felt that there was no way some psychics in California could have that intelligence unless there was some kind of security leak.
All right. Well,
in fact, no leak was found, of course.
Yeah, let's talk about the need today. I had a call in the first hour of the program, Russell, from a truck driver who said, you know, we're used to being tested. We go into one of the way stations, and they do a radiological test. You know, they look for anything that might be going tick, tick, tick. But he said, gee, you know, they've got the highway closed down to one lane, and they've got somebody out there testing every single vehicle, and he named the highway, for radiological tick, tick, ticks. And that's a little scary. And so if there's somebody out there with something that is going tick, 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 it seems to me that there we have a solid job for a remote viewing team. And the fact that our government would not now be supporting such an effort when we are at such incredible risk blows my mind.
Well, I think that we could do something like that, but it would be difficult. It's a boring task, is my short answer.
A boring task.
It would be difficult for a remote viewer to sit in a toll booth next to the toll taker.
Oh, well, I wasn't suggesting that so much as sitting. I suppose remote viewing doesn't have to be located right at the place where the bomb passes, right?
Remote viewer could have a kind of global task,
yeah,
focusing on what's the next hazard.
Exactly. I mean, how can we not be doing this, Russell? How can we not be doing it? If you really believe in what you were doing and you really believe that these results were real and you're quoting us results, how can we not be doing it?
Oh, we found a downed Soviet airplane and Chinese atomic bomb tests, and we worked on the Iranian hostage situation, so I have no doubt that what we're doing is real. We even had a commendation from Jimmy Carter for finding a downed Russian bomber with an atomic bomb on it, which we found by remote viewing. So we have a lot of experience and a lot of accreditation for things that we did.
Then how can we not be doing it?
The reason we're not doing it is that people are more fearful about being teased in their job than they are getting the job done. It was the first place it was really spelled out to me when I was doing work at Lockheed, which is not psychic work, but building wind shear detectors. And we went to the Air Force and said, this is a serious problem. There have been several crashes due to wind shear, and people have been killed.
Right.
Aren't you guys interested in working on this? He said, we don't have a solution for it. Working on problems that have no solution is career limiting. When you show us a solution, then we'll support you. We're not going to support the research. Eventually, we did have a solution. We were solved. But in a way, remote viewing is like that. We don't understand how remote viewing works, though we've become very skillful at helping people develop the ability. And probably until we have a sound, proven theory for the mechanism for psychic functioning, there's always going to be skepticism about its efficacy and whether it should be supported.
Huh. The media is picking up a little bit better on this sort of thing. They've just begun a new series, and I hope you've caught it. It's called Medium, and I wanted to take a chance to recommend that to my audience. I don't do that with a lot of programs, but this program called Medium is really superb. It's really well done. Have you seen it?
I have not seen it.
Oh, I
recommend
it.
But I certainly agree that the whole country is picking up on the importance and availability of remote viewing. When I was on your show a couple of years ago, I was very impressed that there were 60,000 sites on Google pertaining to remote viewing as a entity in quotation marks.
Sure.
And then the following year, so last year, I looked again before I was on your show, and there were 160,000. And I thought that was astonishing. So I looked again today, and there's 365,000 sites pertaining to remote viewing.
Yes.
So you have a doubling time of a year. So if you find a way to invest money in psychic functioning, it's evidently a growth industry. And the reason for that is very easy to explain, and that is remote viewing is very easy to do. There are hundreds of people around the country teaching how to do remote viewing, how to get in touch with your psychic abilities. When people learn how to do that, they're just amazed that that ability has been latent, and you know what they do? They go out and teach other people. So you have an absolutely exponential growth in the interest in remote viewing and people who are teaching remote viewing.
All right, hold it right there. We'll be right back. Russell Targ is my guest from the high desert, which is turning green with all the rain. I'm Art Bell.
With Art Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
You know, not everybody wants to know about the future. I, for example, don't really want to know. I mean, in a way I do, and I have feelings about it. And I even have concerns, even worries about it. But I'm not sure that I want to know for sure. How about you? My guest is a remote viewer. His name is Russell Targ. He's very, very well respected in all sorts of psychic circles. In a lot of, frankly, technical circles. He's a very, very interesting guy. And I've got a couple of incredibly important questions for him. But first, I see that remote viewers may have been involved with the police and the FBI during the Patricia Hearst kidnapping mess. Is that true?
Yes, we certainly were. I want to mention that you were talking before about why people don't believe in ESP. Our very first book, Mind Reach, has a whole chapter that I wrote with Hal Puthoff talking about the loyal opposition and why people are just afraid of psychic abilities. So I just wanted to mention Mind Reach had gone out of print and was selling for $150 a copy on Amazon.
Wow.
We've now brought it back. So we have a brand new issue of Mind Reach talking about the classified stuff that we had done for the CIA for the first time. And it describes the classified applications that you and I were just talking about.
But while out of print, that thing went for $100.50?
Yes.
Holy mackerel.
And that convinced Hampton Roads to bring it back in a new edition with a lot of new information. So you have the very first book ever written about remote viewing, which is the one Hal Puthoff and I wrote.
Back on the market.
Back on the market.
All
right. And it's has a lot of new information, and it was a collector's item and is now available.
What did remote viewers do in the Patty Hearst case?
The police department at Berkeley came to visit us at SRI a couple of days after the Patty Hearst was kidnapped, and they said that we have a kidnapping and that Patricia Hearst had been taken by somebody, and that somebody was the Symbionese Liberation Army, and they had no idea what it was. They were looking for Symbia on the map to try and find who could have done that. And Pat Price told them on the spot when they first came to SRI that it was a political case and not a ransom case. And Hal Puthoff and Pat Price and I, this is actually the first time I'm telling this story.
Mm-hmm.
We went to the Berkeley police station with the detectives there, and Pat Price asked for a mug book, the list, picture book of the people who had been arrested or were known criminals
right
in that area. And he just sat down at a big oak desk and started turning the pages. And this must have been 1974 when the kidnapping was. And he turned pages and got to about the 10th page. With four pictures on a page, and he put his finger on the picture of one man.
Huh.
Said, that's the man. That's the ringleader. And his name was DeVries. And it turned out that he was the man we know now as Sin Q. And nobody knew anything about it. This was an absolute cold call. Price picked him out of the book.
That's incredible.
So this is a political kidnapping. And they said, well, that guy actually just escaped from prison a few months ago. This is the first we've heard about him. Where did they go?
Right.
Meanwhile, they had taken us to Patty Hearst's house, where there's still cartridges rolling around on the floor under the bed. And Price said, well, I can tell you where they've gone. I don't know where they are now, but they headed north. He pointed north and said, as he closed his eyes, I see two big white gas storage tanks and a restaurant and a bridge over the freeway right next to these tanks. And one of the detectives said, I know where that would be. That's not far from here. That's just over by the refinery. And as we sat in the police station, they dispatched a cruiser, found the kidnapped car, which was a station wagon. Of course, they had left it. But they were extremely impressed that we were able to sit in Berkeley and tell them exactly where to go to find the kidnapped car.
I'm extremely impressed by this story. Russell, why has this not been told before?
Well, we didn't want to tell the story until the last of the perpetrators was actually in prison, and because of the possible danger to ourselves.
Yeah, that's
good. At this point, I'm very sympathetic to what you were saying before, and that is that it's time to tell the truth.
Yes.
That is, I'm not actively doing remote viewing. I'm interested now in helping people to understand that psychic abilities exist. You can use this to make money in the market. You can find your car keys. But I think that psychic ability has, on its world stage, the great importance that it shows us that we greatly misapprehend the whole nature of space-time.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that a Pat Price can quiet his mind, look into the distance, look into the past, describe what occurred, and tell us where something was, indicates that our capabilities are far beyond the limitations that are being set on it. So I really have a almost propagandistic interest now in getting people to explore their own psychic abilities and learn to do this.
All right. As I understand remote viewing, it really, time is not really a factor. Whether we're dealing with the present or the future or the past, it deals equally in these realms. Is that accurate?
That's why we say it's a non-local ability.
Okay.
Non-locality says that space and time simply don't matter. And the most important thing I can tell you about psychic ability is that it's no harder to describe an object across the planet than it is across the street. Similarly, there's no greater difficulty in describing what you will see in the paper tomorrow than there is in describing the object I'm holding in my hand.
All right.
And I have a description of how that works. So I'd like to give my website, which is ESPresearch.com.
All right.
So I have a number of papers on my website to talk about how ESP works together with other things that I'm doing. So you can find Russell Targ at my website, ESPresearch.com.
I hope it holds up. We've taken a lot of websites down. A lot of people listen. Russell, remote viewing then could conceivably predict a specific event in the future, correct?
Oh, there's no doubt about it.
All right.
So the bad news side of this Patricia Hearst case, which is also worth mentioning, we worked for about a week with the Berkeley Police Department, and we also worked a little bit with the Sheriff's Department of Alameda County, and we also worked with the FBI, and we were sworn to not communicate anything between those three agencies.
Uh-huh.
It was very much like the failure of the FBI and the CIA to detect the perpetrators of 9/11, and that here you had the Berkeley police, the FBI, and the sheriff's deputy absolutely not communicating with one another. If they had gotten together, they'd have probably found the Patricia Hearst and the other perpetrators months in advance of what they did. But each one felt that they were about to find the heiress, which would be a big prize, of course.
Sure.
And as a result, they didn't cooperate. So it was a great, it wasn't a failure of intelligence, because they had enough information. It was a failure of cooperation.
Mm-hmm.
And our president is trying to overcome that right now.
Can the future be changed?
You can make use, I believe that events are determined. I think that things have causes. But we can know the future, and if you don't like the future that you see, it appears that you have some choice as to what's going to happen.
Hmm.
An example of that would be where our CIA contract monitor during the program had seen a lot of psychic functioning in our laboratory. He'd been seen many things. This is Ken Kress, who has now written a paper that's in the public domain about the work we did for the CIA. So a lot of this is coming available. But Kress was in Detroit with a colleague, and he had a dream. He had a very frightening dream about being in an airplane crash.
Mm.
And he was a very, very experienced flyer, has flown thousands of airplane trips. But this was so frightening that he decided to cancel his trip. He just felt, from what he knew about psychic abilities, he wasn't going to do this. And as he drove his partner to the airport, his partner got on the airplane and flew away. Kress then had the terrible experience of seeing the plane crash. So what we would say here is that he used his precognitive dream that came, the information in the precognitive dream, to avoid putting himself on the airplane. He experienced the crash by seeing it, but he didn't have to experience the crash by taking part in it.
So the answer is that's yes. It's a yes. The future can be changed.
Well, that would be a good example of a yes, where he was able to make use of information that was psychically derived to not have that experience.
Well, that certainly raises the worth of the ability to do this then? Because that was a big question. I mean, if the future is written in concrete, then what's the point, other than, I guess, knowing when you're going to go or when something big is going to happen? But if indeed an event can be altered, then the worth of what you're doing goes way, way up.
Well, I think that we have life-saving opportunities. In the book I was talking about, Mind Reach, I talk about an early experience where I was riding my motorcycle on a parkway in Palo Alto, where I live, and I began to worry as I would buzz along this high-speed street, what would happen if there was a branch or board in the road? If I would hit a board at 40 miles an hour, I might crash. And I sort of began to worry about that. This is a nice, open, clear road with nothing in it. But I began to slow down and slow down as I worried about this mythical board. And as I came around the corner, there was the board in front of me. But I was then going slowly enough so I could just bump over it instead of crashing.
Yes.
So it's a way of making use of psychic abilities in your life, seeing what's in your future or in the distance, which is often the same thing, to actually enhance the quality of your life or avoid an accident. So the answer to your question, I believe, is yes, that you can use psychic abilities, you can use your precognitive abilities to change an outcome that appears to you psychically. It's as though you move off the ordinary materialistic plane where we live, the ordinary real space-time plane, and get information and see the future. And if you're able to do that, if you can quiet your mind and look into the future, then you can make use of that information. If you don't quiet your mind, if you just bump along in the freeway, in the subway, with the psychic noise and the physical noise, then you're going to be subject to ordinary causality, and whatever's going to happen will happen, and you don't have a lot of control. That's why all the disciplines that teach meditation say it's critical to take charge of your chattering mind and find out a way to quiet it so that you can expand your awareness and take advantage of the opportunities that are right at hand.
Well, of course, this may have been an ability that human beings have long had and have sort of, masked over by the noise of modern living. I mean, I am surrounded by computers, I have deadlines, I'm watching clocks, I'm doing a million things in my mind when I'm doing a program like this, Russell. My mind is not quiet. There's no chance that I'd get a vision or a warning of anything. I'm so busy, like most people, frankly, are. However, remember the recent earthquake and tsunami? Well, the story was that almost all the animals escaped. They knew it was coming. The animals escaped, but not the human beings.
Well, the animals had time. They didn't have to check their email.
The human beings died. The animals got out of there in time.
Yeah, I've read that they ran to higher ground.
Well, is that what we're talking about here?
Well, what we're talking about is fine. That is, I want to agree with you. It's been known for thousands of years that are the earliest Vedic writing and the Hindus and the Buddhists, the Gnostic Christians, the Kabbalistic Jews, and the Sufis, that's everybody, all the mystics, have known since 2,000 years before Christ that it was possible to expand your awareness and experience moving into these spacious realms. It's been talked about. We can talk about that later on. But that ability is available. But you have to find the off switch on your mental chatter. And
easier said than done, actually.
Well, you're busy in the studio. There must be a half an hour during the day.
Oh, yes.
Where you can sit, not to be disrespectful, but everybody has a half an hour where they can sit down and discover who they are.
Absolutely.
And that's what's been asked for millennia.
Now, is it true that you worked with the NSA? The NSA is probably, I would think, the most secretive agency that we have. I mean, they're really a dark, dark agency, and they break codes, do things like that. And were you or was your group involved with the NSA?
We had two very humorous actions with the NSA, and the NSA is not known for their humor.
Oh, absolutely not.
In the very first remote viewing that we did with Ingo Swann, when he first came and taught Hal Puthoff and me how to be psychic, we had something called Project Scanate, which is scanning by coordinates. And a CIA friend, who was not even a contract monitor at that time, gave us the coordinates of his cabin. And Ingo Swann was then given those coordinates and asked to describe what was there. And, of course, we didn't know what it was, except that it was coordinates that looked like they were on the east coast of America. And Swann went on to describe a large facility with underground bunkers and a semicircular driveway and buildings and radar dishes and on. Mm-hmm. And just about that time, Pat Price called us, having heard about our work with Uri Geller, which is another story. And he said, oh, I can look at that site. I've been using my psychic ability to catch crooks. And Price drifted psychically into the place and read the file folders inside the building. Price was the only one we know who could read. And all the material they gave was correct. And the CIA was very amazed because that wasn't what they had targeted us on. And Price explained, well, the more you hide something psychically, the more it shines like a beacon in psychic space. The reason I zeroed in on this is that guy's cabin was not so interesting, but this huge NSA facility really got my attention.
Yeah, and I'm sure there is too.
And I described that whole event with the NSA in Mind Reach was the only place that's ever been described how Price was able to read the file folders. We wound up having a whole NSA investigation because they were furious,
I'm sure,
with the idea that the CIA would target psychics on a super-secret code-breaking facility in Virginia.
Oh, brother.
NSA was not amused by that.
I'm sure not.
After the hour, I can tell you about the other entertaining thing we did with the NSA.
Entertaining, huh? Well, it doesn't sound like they were particularly entertained, perhaps horrified.
Well, everything we did taught us more about the capabilities that we all have with our psychic abilities. It was a great learning process for us.
Yes, but it seems to me, after such an event, the NSA, for example, would want you on their side. And if they couldn't have you on their side, then they would want you locked up in a very deep, dark basement somewhere, unavailable to be looking at their secret code-breaking facilities.
Let's talk about code-breaking after the hour.
All right. Good. That's the way to do a tease. Code-breaking after the hour. The NSA. Be no such agency, folks. I don't know. Humor doesn't seem like the right word. Alerted, horrified, and many other words that I probably ought not use. All right, everybody, we'll take a break from the high desert, the high green desert. This is Coast to Coast AM, raging through the night this night with Russell Targ.